Maine's craft brewing industry, its dramatic growth, and potential for the future. The Maine Brewers Guild commissioned an economic study a couple of years ago and found that craft brewing in Maine generates some big numbers. At that point, the study found, sales of craft beer in Maine rang up at $423 million a year, and that 1,500 people worked in the industry. Mind you, those numbers are from 2 years ago. There are a lot more craft breweries in Maine now. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss craft brewing, the economics, and the fun part, the beer. We'll learn about the new quality control lab for brewers at the University of Southern Maine, tomorrow's New England Craft Brew Summit, and some of the important issues facing the craft brew industry moving forward. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Last year, the nation's largest brewery, Anheuser-Busch InBev, produced more than 350 million barrels of beer. The entire craft brewing industry in the U.S. produced a fraction of that, about 22 million barrels. But despite Anheuser-Busch's huge market share, craft beer production is up dramatically in recent years, and especially here in Maine. Today, we're going to learn about some of the great craft beers brewed in our state, and we'll also talk about the chemistry behind beer brewing, but we probably won't get into too many details. With me in the studio, Sean Sullivan, Executive Director of the Maine Brewers Guild, Heather Sanborn, President of the Maine Brewers Guild and co-owner of Rising Tide Brewery, and Lucille Benedict, PhD, Associate Professor of Chemistry at the University of Southern Maine. We would love to hear from you, of course. Are you surprised by the number of local breweries in Maine right now? Do you have a favorite? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And one housekeeping note this afternoon, we realize that many of you turned in yesterday to hear me speak with former NPR correspondent Anne Garrels about her new book on life inside Putin's Russia. Due to circumstances beyond our control, we had to postpone that interview. We apologize for the disruption in our schedule and hope to have her on our program in the very near future. So welcome to all of you here today. What a fun topic. And Sean, at the very top of the show, I quoted some of the numbers from the report you all did a couple years ago. But, you know, I remember reading in one of the papers about a year ago that the number of craft breweries in Maine was expected to double in the upcoming year. Has that happened in the last year or two? Have we seen a doubling of breweries?
Pretty close. You know, if in 2013, we had 35 breweries in the state. Today, we have 71 breweries. So it's taken about 3 years, but we've doubled it, and I'd say by the end of the year, we're looking at about 80 plus.
80. Where are they?
They're all over the state, and that's the best part. I think a lot of new industries only are growing within metropolitan centers or near metropolitan centers. With breweries, they're everywhere from the Forks to Kittery to Limerick to Lubeck. Really, this is an industry that's finding success around the state, down dirt roads, in old mills. Every town and community is soon to have their own brewery.
Wow. So 3 years ago, 35. By the end of this year, 80. And probably 10 years ago, probably, what, a half dozen?
Yes, probably about that.
Wow. So if you haven't been out and about in a while, you'd be surprised. Heather, who is a craft brew customer? I have a stereotype in my mind's eye, but I have a feeling it's not right.
Yeah, it's really diverse at this point. It could be anyone over the age of 21 at this point. We see groups of that stereotypical, probably 20-something that you had in mind, but a lot of
20-something guy.
You know, I think on any given weekend in our tasting room, the gender balance is pretty even. And I know an awful lot of women who absolutely adore craft beer and have to drag their significant others in with them to try it out. So we're just seeing an enormous diversity. And we also have a really a lot of folks who are older who come in and enjoy it as well. Retirees have lots of time to explore the different breweries around the state. And we have a lot of those who are big fans as well.
Lucille, tell us about the lab. This is really exciting. The University of Southern Maine is now in this. Are we building? Are we finished? Where are we in the process of creating a quality control lab for breweries in Maine?
Yeah, we are right in the middle of the process of building this lab. We actually currently right now we have installations going on as we speak in the lab of new equipment. And this summer we'll be spending the time really getting our methods down right. And then in the fall, our first pilot class will be going through the academic year and learning all about yeast and how to count it all the way up to how to use really sophisticated instrumentation.
So you say your first pilot class, so yeah. USM students starting next fall will be able to take a class in brewing.
Actually, brewers will be able to take a class in quality control methods, and our students will be the ones who will be teaching them and helping with workshops.
Wow, yeah. That's really interesting. Sean, why is this needed? Why do we need a quality control lab in Maine?
Great question. Brewers for a long time, you know, the key here is that when you pick up a beer and you try it and you really like it, you often want to share it with friends. So you might go visit that same bar a couple months later. And when you order that beer, you want it to taste the exact same way and be as great as that first sip that you had. It's really challenging for brewers to be able to make a consistent quality product. And there's a lot of science behind their ability to do so. So with this lab, it's going to allow our brewers to test their beer to ensure that they can create this quality product over and over again when they're dealing with so many variables. So it's a huge opportunity for them not only to change a process where they used to have to ship it across country and wait for the results. Now they can work locally. They can learn how to do this themselves. And eventually they'll be able to do it in their own brewery as well.
Heather, is that what you have done at Rising Tide up till this point? Ship it across the country? Samples across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. We ship our samples to lab facilities on the West Coast for testing several times a year, but we're not able to do that as often as we would like to be able to test for everything. We also are able to test for a lot of stuff in-house, and we've got a full-time lab person on our staff, but a lot of breweries that are just starting out or that are even smaller than mine don't have that yet and wouldn't know where to start with that. And so Lucy's students are just going to be a fantastic resource in getting people started and then, you know, helping them figure out which procedures and processes should be brought in-house in their own labs as they continue to grow.
I want to back up a little bit and ask you all how you all got into this. Lucille, a PhD in chemistry, the world was your oyster. How did you end up in brewing, a specialty in brewing?
Well, first, I love homebrewing, so that definitely got me started. But it was really looking for a way to engage my students in chemistry. As you know, it's kind of a daunting subject. And I was walking through Allagash on a tour one day and got talking with our quality control manager, and we got talking about sort of the dreams they had for what they could do if they had all this equipment and they could test on. And I had all the equipment, but nothing to test with it. So we had a nice collaboration start up, and that's kind of where it went from there.
Okay, but and you're also a home brewer yourself?
Yes, yeah.
So you weren't starting from square one, exactly.
Absolutely not.
Okay, and Sean, what about you? How did you come to this industry?
You know, I get this question all the time, and I consider myself the luckiest son of a gun in Maine in this position. I get to travel to every brewery in the state, and it really came about because this industry was growing at such a rate, and the Maine Brewers Guild itself had been around for a long time, but it was all volunteers. It was brewery owners pushing both the marketing efforts that we do and also the legislative efforts. And they realized that they really need someone full-time committed to it. I had been running a nonprofit that partnered with a lot of different breweries and ultimately, you know, applied for the job and was the lucky guy who got the opportunity to help this industry grow to the next level and really start to encourage people to think about it a little bit more seriously.
Okay, and Heather, what's your story in the story of Rising Tide? It's sort of not one of the oldest, but not one of the newest either, breweries in Maine.
Right, we've been around about 5.5 years, and we started really, really small and just sort of maybe double the size of a homebrew setup. My husband was working alone, and I had the opportunity once we did an expansion and moved to Fox Street in our East Bayside neighborhood to quit my job as an attorney and come on board to run the business full-time. And it's been fantastic. I've never looked back. And I love being part of this industry. It's so collegial and it's so much fun to be part of.
That's one of the things I wanted to ask you all. You know, a couple weeks ago, we did a Maine Calling program on the coffee roasting business, and I was really surprised at sort of the lack of competition and more the idea of helping each other. There's room for more. Come on in. We'll show you what we're all about. Same thing's going on in the brewing industry?
Absolutely. It's really a hallmark, I think, of the brewing industry here in Maine especially, but also across the country. And it's one of the reasons that craft brewing is growing so quickly and is so successful and has the focus on quality that I think we're developing is because we're all sharing best practices with each other and talking about quality beer all the time to each other and with each other and brewing together even.
Sean, I know that in 2014, the goal was, or the estimate was $423 million a year. What is the estimate now? And what do you think the potential is for the future for Maine's craft brewing industry?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's in Maine and that's all the beer sold in Maine. So not just made by Maine brewers, but all the craft beer sold in Maine is about $430 million. That was in 2014. So I would estimate in 2015, we would have cracked that $500 million number. And I think that's really indicative of the fact that this is an industry that is making a serious economic impact here in the state and presents huge opportunities, not only in the food and beverage industry, but also for other sectors like agriculture, manufacturing, and tourism, too.
Right. So who is the customer of the future? I mean, are we ever going to see a day in which as many people are buying craft beer as are buying Budweiser and Miller? Or is this, are they really two different markets?
You know, it's a classic David versus Goliath right now. Right now, although craft beer is aggressively eroding market share away from big beer, the Brewers Association, the National Trade Group, was hoping by 2020 that craft beer would account for 20% of total beer sales in the United States. Well, in 2015, they already hit that number, 5 years ahead of schedule. So I do think we'll continue to see craft beer grow as people have a brewery that opens up in their neighborhood, they want to support their neighbors. They want to go down and visit that brewery. So like Heather said, you know, we have retirees that are coming into this in a way because they want to be involved in the food and beverage industry in their own neighborhood. And we also have young people who really are attracted to the collaborative, authentic spirit that kind of craft beer espouses and really lives by. So the craft beer consumer of the future, the other important thing to understand is that they also aren't as kind of brand allegiant. And this is an important thing that allows for, I think, a lot of the collaboration. Oftentimes, consumers like a specific style of beer, but not necessarily they will only drink this brewery's beer. Whereas we all have an uncle that might only drink Miller Lite or something like that. Consumers these days really like to try a huge variety of beer from a number of breweries.
Okay. How do laws in Maine compare to other states? I'll put this one to you, Heather.
You know, I think we're somewhere in the middle. We have one of the higher excise tax rates across the country, especially of the really top craft beer producing states. And we have been making progress on making sure that craft brewers can get their products out to consumers. We passed a tasting room law about 4 years ago now that has been an enormous benefit for the state of Maine, for these small brewers.
And so what did that law do?
Yeah, it made it possible for us to charge for samples in our tasting rooms. And that was so important because the prior law was that you had to give away samples for free and only in conjunction with a tour that also had to be free. And there was no way that very small brewers who only make a tiny amount of beer could afford to give away any of their production volume, basically. It just didn't make sense. And it was also really difficult to hire anybody to give free tours when there was really no way to ensure you were going to make any money at all off the visitor. So we've really been able to revolutionize beer tourism in Maine because of that law. People are coming to Maine specifically to go visit the tasting rooms all around the state. And then they're going and also spending money at the bars and restaurants and, you know, tourist attractions, hotels, you know, and really engaging with all the other great things that Maine has to offer. So it's been an enormous sort of symbiotic relationship with the other industries within the state.
In Portland alone, there are a couple tour companies, right, that have their little buses and take you around to breweries?
Yeah, absolutely. There's two beer tour bus companies operating and growing exponentially.
Uh-huh. More coming for the rest of the state? Do we know?
Yeah.
In fact, there's one that just opened up in Bangor as well. And one of our Portland-based brew tour companies just opened up in Boston. So we're actually exporting this model to another state, which I think is really interesting.
Okay, so before we go to our first break, I have to ask each of you what your personal favorite style is. You don't have to give a brand. What about you, Lucille? What are you, when you head to Rising Tide or one of the other breweries in Maine, what do you ask for?
I am definitely looking for something dark, so I would have to say a stout would be my beer of choice.
Okay, what about you, Heather?
My favorite right now is the Goza style, which is a kind of less frequently seen, but it's a delicious, I call it adult Gatorade. It's just kind of tart and a little bit salty. And
Goza, how do you spell that?
G-O-S-E.
Okay. And what about you, Sean?
You know, I think if you looked in my fridge, the answer would be IPAs. However, I've really been exploring a lot of sours, and that's been an interesting new style to check out.
I don't even know what a sour is. What is a sour beer?
Yeah, sour beer is one that's often fermented with certain strains of actually bacteria, lactobacillus, pediococcus, and others, Brettanomyces, that allows the beer to take on kind of a sour, tart characteristic that creates an interesting, refreshing kind of flavor.
Lucille is nodding and smiling as you say that. Well, we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions are number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Collins Center for the Arts, offering the Met live in HD with Puccini's Madame Butterfly, April 2nd. CollinsCenterForTheArts.com. And Mid-Maine Restoration, specializing in steeple and tower restoration throughout Maine and New Hampshire for over 25 years. Maine-steeplejacks.com.
Baseball pitchers today are throwing harder and starting younger. On the next Fresh Air, sports writer Jeff Passan talks about why so many pitchers, including teenagers, are blowing out their elbows and needing surgery. His new book is called The Arm. And journalist Jacob Bernstein, son of Carl Bernstein and the late Nora Ephron, talks about his HBO documentary about his mother. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
My first car was a stripped-down 1964 Ford Falcon. I'm Cokie Roberts. It was the most pathetic car you've ever seen. It had basically a radio and a heater. I had to teach my husband how to drive a stick shift. He'd learn. Imagine turning that car into the programs I love.
For more information, visit mpbn.net and click on the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program button in the top left corner. And we'd like to thank Rosamond in Bar Harbor for donating a 2002 Honda CR-V.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the craft brewing industry in Maine. With me in our studio, Sean Sullivan, Executive Director of the Maine Brewers Guild. Heather Sanborn is President of the Maine Brewers Guild and co-owner of Rising Tide Brewery. And Lucille Benedict is an Associate Professor of Chemistry at USM. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief, please brief, email to talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Jason Perkins, who is brewmaster at Allagash Brewing Company. Jason, tell us about Allagash. You're one of the elder statesmen of the Maine brewing scene, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know. That kind of makes me feel a little old.
Not you, Allagash.
So Allagash has been around we're just about approaching our 21st year. So we were, I guess in kind of one of the earlier waves of craft brewing here in Maine, open up around the same time as places like Sebago Brewing and Casco Bay Brewing. We've been around for 21 years. We've always made exclusively Belgian style beers. That's kind of our thing.
All right. What kind of changes have you seen in the industry other than the explosive growth of it?
You said it. It's been explosive growth for sure, especially in the last last decade and even the last 5 years. It's been really phenomenal to see the number of breweries that are opening up in across the country and in Maine, and also just the diversity of beer styles. I think it was a point where anything different than a light lager or domestic lager was craft, and now within that range there's just a huge range of what craft beer can be, and a huge range of flavors, and it's really fun to see. And it's also fun to see the consumer's taste changing, which is really what drives it all. And, you know, the education level of the consumer. I mean, you know, when I started Allagash, you know, 17 plus years ago, most of the events we would go to, it would require a lot of explanation about the beer styles we're making and, you know, really what these new beer styles meant. And now it's so common for the consumers we deal with at events and in restaurants and bars are just super knowledgeable about the wide range of styles that are available. So it makes our life and job a lot more fun. Really.
Yeah. And you have a new beer, right?
Yeah, we do. We do. We tend to, like a lot of craft breweries, make a lot of new beers in a given year, but most of them are pretty small scale for us. And every now and again, we have a new one that comes out. And we have one called 16 Counties we'll be releasing in a few weeks. And anyone who grew up in Maine may guess, 16 Counties, the name is drawn from the 16 Counties in Our State song that many Maine kids learned as a kid.
You going to sing that for us?
I grew up in Vermont, so I have a past. I don't actually know it very well, but many of our employees know it well. But it's a beer brewed with 100% Maine grains of some kind. So there's some malted barley grown and malted in the state of Maine, as well as some raw wheat and some raw oats. That just means unmalted oats and unmalted wheat, all grown in the state of Maine and processed in the state of Maine. It's been a fun project because it's another one of these things that stems from the growth of craft beer, because even 5 years ago, even 2 years ago, you really couldn't source brewing ingredients very easily, if at all, in the state of Maine, just because they weren't available, they weren't grown. But one of the great side effects of craft beer growth is that there's a demand for it. And so there's a handful of folks who are working to produce grains and malted grains that are suitable for brewing.
All right. Well, all the other guests here are nodding as you say that. So sounds like a really important point. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Jason Perkins is brewmaster at Allagash Brewing Company.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And for the questions from you, we'll start with something from Facebook. This is from Matt. He writes, does hyper-localism in craft brewing help Maine? When small local breweries don't distribute out of state, it seems like it'd be harder to build an audience, but it also might build a tighter community and drive tourism. What's the balance? Good question, Sean.
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, the model we're kind of heading towards with craft beer here, whenever I tell people there's 71 breweries in the state, they say, isn't that way too many? Can Maine really support 71 breweries? But the truth is, not all of our breweries are looking to become the next Budweiser. And in fact, they're not even necessarily looking to become the next Shipyard, you know, in terms of scale. So everybody is, and we're finding that brewers are able to create a business model around that small area. So I think we'll continue to see breweries that are only operating within a small area. But, you know, in Maine here, as everybody knows, we're blessed with a huge influx of tourists throughout the year. And these tourists come and they visit these breweries thanks to the tasting room law. They meet the people behind the beer. They try the beer. And inevitably what happens, it may take a year, it may take 3 years, it may take 5 years. They go to their home state, they go to their bottle shop, their local bar, and they say, you gotta stock this beer that I tried in Maine. It was so good. I met the owners. So we are building up that export market as well. And I think we can really find a balance between this hyper-local market, as they phrased it, and also building up a demand for Maine products outside of the state.
All right, which is rising tide?
Yeah, we have been really careful to not expand too far away from home. Beer is a perishable product, and we think fresh beer tastes best. And we think the way to ensure that our beer is fresh is to keep it close to our headquarters and with in places where it's going to sell through quickly, where people are going to know about our brand and ask for it, as Sean was talking about. One of those markets for us is Boston, and that the North Shore area, Massachusetts, southern New Hampshire, and then throughout Maine. So we've really kind of stayed in that area and haven't added any new markets for 3 years now. And we, as we continue to see growth within Maine, we don't have the capacity to add new markets right now, and we're really happy with that because it means that our beer is fresh on the shelves for consumers.
All right, good question. We're going to go to Augusta and Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Most of the talk so far has been about taste. Mine's about texture. About a year ago, I was introduced to a nitro stout and then a nitro ale, which is, as you know, it's carbonated with nitrogen instead of CO2. So one question is, can it really be called carbonated, or do we need a different verb?
Lucille, okay, go ahead. Your second question.
Are there other gases, other viable gases being experimented with? And then the third part is, are there any main brewers with nitro brands?
All right. Well, Lucille, I'm glad we have you on the panel here today. Nitrogenized, what would you call it?
You know, I have no idea what you would actually call it. I agree, carbonated is probably not the best word, but since it's used so often, I think that's where we go. But yeah, so that's what I would have to say.
What about, are there experiments, as far as you know, with other kinds of gases?
Not that I know of. You know, there's some fun gases you could think about, like helium or sulfur hexafluoride, but probably nothing that you'd want to put into your beer. I think nitrogen, carbon dioxide, they're all very inert gases, so they don't.
Yeah, I would say that nitrogenated beers do have CO2 in them as well. So they are carbonated just to a much lower level. And then they're pushed with nitrogen out through a spout that has a special restrictor plate in it so that it causes that cascade of bubbles that you've seen in a Guinness and in lots of craft beers that are nitrogenated as well. So actually Rising Tide has a nitrogenated beer that we're going to be releasing next Friday. I'm really excited. Just a very small batch.
Well, there you go, Chris. Rising Tide's releasing one next Friday. So is there going to be a tasting next Friday night?
Yes, next Friday night in our tasting room only, we will have a nitrogenated beer on draft. We haven't had one in years because we've been working on trying to make sure we know how to do it well before we're selling it again out in the marketplace.
Okay, it's about, what, a 45-minute drive for you, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Sean.
I would just say up in Orono as well, I'd encourage you to try Orono Brewing Company's Nitro Cream Ale and also their stout on nitro, as they phrase it. And in South Portland, Four River Brewing Company is also nitrogenating their stout as well, which I think is called the John Henry, and their red ale. So a lot of breweries experimenting with it, that piece of equipment that allows you to nitrogenate beer, if that's the word, is expensive. So if you're wondering why it's not happening as quickly as you'd like it to see, that's probably why.
Okay, we may be inventing words here on Main Calling today. Chris, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Ellsworth and Dick. Hi, Dick, go ahead.
Hi. When I'm in England, there are a variety of bitter beers that are delicious, and I'm wondering why we don't have bitters in the States.
Heather? We have perplexed looks here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the English bitter style is sort of interpreted in America as sort of a pale ale. So they're very closely related. English-style yeasts produce some different flavors than American-style yeasts that American pale ales are typically brewed with. So they're closely related to those American pale ales, but it is a different thing. I think what you're going to see over the next few years is a continuing playing with more historic styles. That's already happening, and I think you will see more of those English pale ales or English bitters being brewed and being called that again over the next few years.
Okay. Thanks, Dick, for your call. We have an email here from Anne Marie. She writes, last year, Full Pint for Maine was launched as a consumer activist group working to present and secure legislation that would ensure when customers and bars or restaurants purchased what was advertised as a pint of beer, that they received a true measured pint of beer. She says, commonly pint glasses are used in establishments, but it's not possible or practical to fill them to the top. And wondering if we should change the advertising of a pint of beer to a glass of beer. What's the position of your guests on the concept? Pay for a pint, get a pint. Sean, is this something that you've heard much of?
We've definitely heard this. And, you know, look, we're brewers. We want to get our fair pour of beer as well. We certainly appreciate the thought behind this. You know, I think it's important to understand the alcohol industry, and beer in particular, is a very heavily regulated industry. And we're constantly working to ensure that we're not only meeting those guidelines, but potentially exceeding them. You know, my simple advice is if you ever go to a bar, tasting room, and you don't get the full pour of what you're asking for, then I would definitely say something to the bartender, and I'm sure they'd be happy to top it off. At the same time, I think part of the consumer experience of craft beer is actually visual as well. And seeing that small brewers spend a lot of time and effort to create a nice head on the beer, which is that little patch of foam at the top. So if you don't see a beer that's fully poured to the brim with just clear liquid, that's okay. And I'd encourage you to look into kind of what the head of the beer as well contributes to the overall taste and body of the beer too. But we certainly support full. If you say a pint, it should be a pint.
Okay, so we'll go to Portland and John. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yeah. John? Hi. I'm an attorney at Bernstein Shore here in Portland, and I'm curious if the guests could share their insights on how these breweries are managing access to raw materials like sought after hops, and if maybe Heather or Sean could speak a little to hop contracts.
Heather.
Yeah, we have hop contracts running all the way to 2020 at this point. We may even have 2021 crop year contracts at this point. So it's a commodity. We have to forecast what we think we're going to need. And then every 6 months or so, we revise those contracts based on our new predictions of what we might need and what varieties we need to contract for. The hops take 3 years to be viable. So the farmers need to know what to plant and what to focus on in terms of different varieties and how much to plant as far ahead as possible. And so it's a commodity we have to contract for.
What part of Maine do you source your hops from? Where are they grown?
Most of our hops are actually grown in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, okay.
There is a small hop growing industry that is just getting off the ground in Maine, and we support it as much as we possibly can. But I think if we were to try to use all Maine hops and we were the only ones in the state using all Maine hops, there might be enough for us to operate for a week or two.
Right. But so this is an opportunity for small farmers. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah. There's only about 30 acres of production of hops right now. Hops are if people don't know, they provide the bittering and citrus component to beer. There's only about 30 acres, and that would provide, if the full harvest, like Heather said, would provide about less than 1% of what our total breweries need. But I think it's amazing that breweries have to contract out this, and it shows that this industry is growing beyond the materials that are being grown to support this industry at a rate that's much faster. The analogy I like to draw is, imagine if someone said to you right now you had to figure out how much gasoline your car was going to use 5 years from now. That's the position our brewers are in with hops, and it makes it really hard to plan for your business. And it also makes it extremely difficult for new entrants, the new people who are trying to start a brewery. In order for them to secure hops, they're paying potentially four times as much as what others are.
Wow. Do we have the climate to grow hops on a large scale in Maine? We do? Okay, great.
We do, and the University of Maine is actually looking into what varieties would grow best here as well.
Oh, interesting. Well, thanks for your question, John. It's a good one. I think we can squeeze one more question in before the break. Peter from Ocean Point. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me on. Hey, I've been reading this book by Colin Woodward, and he talks about Maine being in Yankeedom, and we're having a high level of communitarianism. Even though we're capitalist, we seem to work together for the cooperation of all, less competition, more cooperation. So I wonder if this is going on in other regions of the nation, the sort of cooperation that your guests spoke about, and how does it help each guest to help others?
And I should mention, you can go on the MPBN Maine Calling, mainecalling.net page and listen to Keith Shortall's interview with Colin about his book that was just a couple weeks ago. So how do we work together?
You know, in the guild, virtually every brewery in the state is a member of our guild. We actually have a private Facebook group. So to give you specific examples of what this collaboration looks like, we just talked about hops. We often have a new brewer that says, oh my God, it's all in metrics. So they say, I need 22 pounds of Citra hops. Does anybody have some? And you'll be amazed. Within a couple hours, you have two or three breweries saying, I can offer it to you and I can sell them to you at the cost I bought them. Allagash just literally sold all of their hops. Now they're buying them in much bigger quantities at their cost to a bunch of breweries around the state. We're seeing the same thing with across all materials of brewing. Pieces of equipment as well are being donated from one brewery to the other or sold from one brewery to the other. And it is happening around the nation. I think here in Maine, it happens to a greater extent. You know, I chat with guild leaders around the country, and there's probably more competition than collaboration in most other states. But I think that speaks to the spirit of Maine. And it also is a reason why Maine has a greater opportunity than others to really derive kind of the fullest potential of this industry here in the state. And that's not just, you know, for food and bev, but like I said, that's tourism, agriculture, you know, manufacturing.
All right. Well, we do have to go to a break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the University of Maine School of Law, located in Portland, committed to justice and leadership in a changing world. MaineLaw.maine.edu. The World Affairs Council, connecting Maine and the world with international speakers and global topics. Learn more at wacmaine.org. And Casella, committed to increasing recycling rates while reducing residential trash and landfill loads through zero-sort recycling. Casella, giving resources new life. Many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN radio, television, and or online, please visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information. Or you can call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. Again, that's 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Craft Brewing in Maine. And what's the future? With me in our studio, Lucille Benedict, Associate Professor of Chemistry at USM. Heather Sanborn, President of the Maine Brewers Guild and co-owner of Rising Tide Brewery. And Sean Sullivan, the Executive Director of the Maine Brewers Guild. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. Here's a question from Emin for Lucy. Can you please elaborate on the significance of the experience that the students receive by participating in this program?
Absolutely, yeah. The students participating in this program get to experience chemistry in a real-world application, which can be difficult to do in our typical teaching labs. They also get to work directly with the industry leaders in the brewing industry locally. And as you know, I mean, this is a growing industry where there's going to be more and more jobs opening up, especially in quality control. So we will have a crop of students each year that will be coming out ready for jobs that are hopefully waiting for them.
Okay. We'll go to the calls now. We're going to go to Tim in Portland. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hey there. I just wanted to call in and say hello and give a little bit of my perspective. First of all, you've got three very, very important members of our beer community. I'm the owner of Oxbow Brewing Company, and we're based out of Newcastle, Maine, and Portland, Maine. And yeah, Heather and Sean and Lucille have just done great work with our local scene here. And I wanted to share a little bit about my perspective and what I've experienced in my travels. I love the way that Heather and Nathan run their business with keeping their, you know, beautiful hoppy beers fresh and close to home. We produce kind of different beers that tend to age and travel a little bit better. And as a result, we've spread them around the country and the world a bit more. And I personally have traveled around, you know, promoting our beers and helping to spread the word of Maine beers in general. And I've just found, you know, no matter where I am, that there's this perception of Maine beers as just super high quality. People are aware that we've got a great brewing community here, and there's really a brand, a Maine beer brand, that's the result of all the hard workers in the state that brew the beer, that sell the beer, that grow the ingredients for the beer, and then the beer drinkers as well that do their part in supporting all of us and, you know, commenting on social media and spreading the word the way that modern day beer drinkers do. And it's just a really, really cool thing to be in a bar far, far away from home. And when I say that I'm a Maine brewer, you know, their faces light up and get really, really excited.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. And we also welcome you and anybody else listening to post on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, which will live on when the hour is over. Thanks so much for calling. We're going to go to Epping, New Hampshire. And Dan, hi, Dan, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I have one question, and I'll take my answer off the air. I'm looking for a non-alcoholic good beer. Thank you.
Okay. Is there a non-alcoholic beer, a craft beer in Maine? And maybe I'll start with you, Lucille. Is it more difficult for a small-scale brewery to create a non-alcoholic beer than an alcoholic beer?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely more difficult to create a non-alcoholic beer. I mean, I'm sure Heather could answer this better than I could, but when you're going through that whole fermentation process, that's where a lot of the flavor compounds are being created. And when you're creating a non-alcoholic beer, you're not necessarily going through that same process. So it's much harder to get that flavor profile that a beer drinker is looking for.
Yeah, I think there's some really neat alternative beverages, I guess, that are being made in our craft industry that I might recommend. Kombucha is one of them that comes to mind that has either no alcohol or very, very low amount of alcohol, and that is being made right in the East Bayside neighborhood in Portland. So I might recommend trying that out. And we have some great craft sodas that are made in Maine as well. By breweries sometimes, like Atlantic and Shipyard both make soda lines.
Okay. We're going to move on to Ed, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Ed. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? I just wanted to see if there was any effort being made legislatively to get the rules changed about growlers. I mean, there's amazing collaboration between all the brewers, but it breaks down for the customers when you can't take a growler and have a generic growler that you could sort of just keep with you.
Got you, Ed. You're not the only one with this question. We also have an email from someone asking about growlers. So, Sean, first explain what a growler is and then tell me if there's any movement to change the law in Maine.
So a growler is a name for a certain type of bottle. They're usually 32 or 64 ounces. They have a kind of single finger loop on the side, if you can imagine it. And they're commonly used by breweries to fill up off their draft lines and sell kind of a higher quantity. Because it's a larger volume, they're meant to be shared. And I think that's a really important thing. I get so many emails about this, and you know, my trunk is full of growlers as well, and I get it. But what you have to, you know, I've talked with a lot of our brewers about it, and you know, what our brewers have explained to me, which I think is really important, is, you know, they spend an enormous amount of time crafting and creating these products, just like we've been talking about all day today. They want to be able to put that product into a piece of packaging that represents their brand and that speaks to the values that they have as well. You wouldn't go into Pizza Hut and ask them to put their pizza into a Papa John's box when you go out. And I think, you know, our brewers right now feel like that it's important that they have their own product in their own bottle. It's also a question of taxes. And liquor enforcement in Maine, you know, taxes breweries by the gallon of beer that they produce. And they want to ensure that a brewer can't make a batch of beer and then put it into somebody else's bottles. So they are against that change. And ultimately, it's something that in the future, it may change. But for right now, it's important that particularly when that beer is going to be shared, we want, if it says your name on the front of that bottle, it better be your product in that bottle. So
are people asking this question because it's different in other places? Yeah,
it is different in other places. And, you know, our brewers spend so much time working on these products. They just want to make sure that it's being presented. Growlers tend to spoil the beer a lot more easily than other pieces of packaging. So it's really a quality control measure, which I think is, you know, relevant to the topic of today.
Right, right. And I know from my husband's minimal experience with home brewing that sanitizing is just so important to the final product. And you lose, Heather, control over that if somebody's bringing a bottle from home, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, that question of misbranding is certainly one that worries small brewers in Maine.
Okay. We're going to move on. Thanks for your question, Ed. You speak for several people who have written or called into the show today. We're going to go to Hugh in Ellsworth. Hi, Hugh. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I had actually a comment and a question. I teach courses on Gaelic, Irish Gaelic, and the word growler comes from, at least from the there were so many Gaelic speakers at one time in America that it was Girolar, which means fresh drink in the can. So it actually became kind of condensed, or it became into, it worked out to be growler rather than three words in the Gaelic. So that's my definition of that. So that was one comment. The other was, and my concern is the can liners for beer cans. I went online one time because I was going to buy some canned beer, and I've made beer myself for 20 years, so I was very concerned about the health effects, and they were giving warnings about the, not sure it was called phthalates or whatever, that's
Sure, there's just a news story yesterday about that just here in Maine. So I'm going to let Heather talk about that. She's nodding. She knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, the can manufacturers who market their cans to us to fill with beer have done a lot of testing and are very insistent about the fact that we put beer in them that is sort of traditional pH range of beer, because if it were outside the normal pH range of beer, it might erode that plastic. But they've done quite a lot of testing on the can liners and developed them so that they are non-reactive with beer. And that's an ongoing effort on the part of can manufacturers to make sure that there aren't phthalates or other sorts of problems in the interaction between the liquid we're putting in and the liner of the can. It's progressed a long, long way in the last many years.
All right, Hugh, thank you for a good question. We have a Facebook post. Can your guests recommend good gluten-free beers? Sean?
I think, you know, we talked about non-alcoholic ones, and we also talked about brewers beginning to innovate in a lot of different styles. Obviously, gluten-free is becoming more important in the marketplace. I think the best example right now is Geary's Brewing, which makes Ixnay, and they call it Ixnay Utenglay because of some labeling requirements that prevented them from saying gluten-free. And it's a process that a lot of breweries around the country are now doing. And if I understand it correctly, essentially they brew it like a normal beer, but then put in a protein that drops the gluten out of the beer. So it's not 100% gluten-free, but it's, you know, 99.99% gluten-free. And I love it personally. I have a sister who's gluten-free or celiacs and really enjoy that beer.
Great. Good question. Something from Heidi. This is an email from Heidi in Medford. Water is really important in Maine, and beer contains a lot of it. Hops are up and coming in Maine as well. Anyone working with environmental groups and local farmers to make sure their product remains as clean as possible?
Rising Tide has signed on to a Brewers for Clean Water group that is, you know, working with the Natural Resources Defense Council to make sure that we're, you know, advocating for clean water. And it's certainly something that's on our radar.
All right. And this is from Sadie from the Maine Crafts Association. She writes, Maine Brewers Guild and Rising Tide are tried and true partners in the Maine Craft Association's Maine Craft Meeting Maine Craft Weekend each October. Our final products are different, but it is fun and exciting to celebrate small businesses making products in Maine and getting the public out and about during Maine Craft Weekend to check out studios and breweries. So we're talking about collaboration earlier in the program. John Jordan writes, local is clearly a big story and people love to support local business. How do you promote Maine-made beers beyond Maine in markets such as Boston, New York, or further west?
I work closely with the Maine Office of Tourism and the Maine Tourism Association, who are very supportive of what we're doing. In fact, the Maine Office of Tourism reports that beer is increasingly becoming one of the top five things that people are asking about when visiting Maine. It's great. It's attracting young people here. They're attending trade shows. And what we often do is send them with our Maine beer trail maps, which they always report to me are the most popular thing at their table. So they're working with tour operators at these conferences around the country, not just in Boston, New York, but also around the world, in fact, to promote what's happening here in Maine. So definitely working the Maine Brewers Guild just got an award from the Greater Bangor Convention Visitors Bureau around the tourism efforts that we've been doing. And tens of thousands of people are visiting Maine every year from outside of Maine to drink our beer.
Okay, Scott, I think we have time for one more question. Can you ask your question quickly? Scott and Woolwich?
Yes, hi. I always prefer unfiltered beer, and I always prefer cask-conditioned ales in both cases. Could you just talk about those two aspects real quickly?
Okay. Go ahead, Heather.
Sure. Rising Tide makes unfiltered beer. We don't actually own a filter, but there's a lot of variation there amongst different craft brewers in terms of what their techniques are, and they're often linked to what types of beer styles that brewer is focusing on. And then as far as cask conditioned beer, there's a lot of great cask conditioned beer being brewed in Maine and throughout the Northeast. And NERAX is an organization, the New England Real Ale Society, that throws some festivals where you can try lots of cask ale.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Scott. We almost out of time, but I want to ask you, Sean, what's going on tomorrow that we're all excited about?
Yeah, so tomorrow we have the New England Brew Summit. It's taking place at USM, and this is a kind of business-to-business craft beer industry conference. It's the first of its kind in New England, and you know there are really few professional events for craft brewers and the businesses that intersect with the industry. We've been talking a lot about it, but it's not just the brewers. It's the lawyers, accountants, real estate agents, construction people, the people who sell the cans and bottles and everything in between. And the summit is really connecting brewers from across New England and beyond to the needed expertise and resources that will allow this growth that we're seeing to be sustained.
How many people are expected to come?
We're looking at about 500 people representing every state in New England and many states from around the country.
Terrific. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. Heather Sanborn, co-owner of Rising Tide Brewery and current president of the Maine Brewers Guild. Lucille Benedict, associate professor of chemistry at the University of Southern Maine. And Sean Sullivan is the executive director of the Maine Brewers Guild. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.